Hello, kids. Welcome back to another episode of Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I host this little show. I contribute to our Wednesday show, PWT Talks NXT, and I do written ROH reports for Pro Wrestling Torch. I have my in-depth reports on both of this weekend's Bound by Honor events are up on the website right now. You can read those, as well as this week's television, which is finally, the post-Supercard of Honor tapings, which we'll be discussing in-depth on this show here today. Regular listeners will know a couple of weeks ago, my old co-host Lola Bradbury had to step down from Talking Honor due to time commitments, other things. You can still find her over on TWM News, doing other podcast stuff over there. So I've been having a couple of different guests joining me each week. Some of my NXT crew, Urson DeRoche, Rich Fan, just getting a variety of perspectives and fresh voices. So this week, particularly exciting because my co-host this week is making her Pro Wrestling Torch podcast debut, and her name is Emily Fear.
Hey, Harley, how's it going?
So, Miss Emily, why don't you tell our listeners a bit about yourself, how your wrestling story, as it were?
Well, I was a secret wrestling fan whenever I was probably like 12 or 13 years old. That was during like the mid to late 90s. So we're talking like Attitude Era, when it probably wasn't like the most friendly for like a 12-year-old girl to be interested in. So it was a, kind of a difficult thing because I liked watching it, but then being around like boys in school who liked wrestling was always a little tough because their attitudes towards me and like most other girls in general, like kind of just reaffirmed all the like the worst stereotypes about wrestling. Whereas at home, I got to watch it like disconnected of that, and it was always great. But I kind of backed away from it for several years. And then recently, just due to kind of different circumstances, I just really got right back into it. My husband went back into a deep dive into all the stuff that's been happening in the last year with wrestling, especially Ring of Honor, reconnecting with his love of Ring of Honor. And so we started there, and we started catching up on New Japan and all the arcs there. So that's kind of where I'm at now. So since about January of this year, I've been regularly following Ring of Honor as well as a couple other feds and just keeping track of the different storylines and wrestlers a part of them.
There you go. Yeah, and I feel like if you're going to pick something to follow in 2018, Ring of Honor is a pretty good choice.
You know, oh, yeah.
It's an hour of TV per week, so certainly not the commitment of watching a Raw and SmackDown. More accessible for an American audience, I'd say, than New Japan. Not just in the sense that it's easier to find, especially with English commentary, so on, stuff like that. And still, week to week, some pretty great wrestling, I'd say. I put it up against any other promotion in that respect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the actual like television broadcast TV title match between Kenny King and Silas, I think that one was one of the best matches I've seen all year. And that was on their actual TV show. That wasn't a pay-per-view match. I actually thought that the 16th anniversary like rehash of that match was inferior. So they're putting really good stuff on their televised broadcast. And for someone like myself who doesn't have cable TV, it's great because I can watch it on just our like local broadcast channels. I don't have to have cable to watch it. So that's a plus too.
Yeah, and they even this week they kind of dropped the ball a little so far. But usually Monday morning by 11 a.m. Eastern time, they've got the latest episode of ROH TV uploaded to the website for free for anybody. Not just Honor Club members, but anybody can go there and watch it. Most weeks, not this week for some reason, but that's that's what it is. ROH, their customer service, that's the one area they could work on, I guess.
They're definitely trying to catch up with the new, like the demand. I think that because their brand is just getting such a surge in popularity, and their wrestlers and their shows are getting huge attendance now, it's going to require a lot of beefing up on the back end of that with their tech stuff, with their tech support, with their streaming. That still leaves a lot to be desired, but I think that's growing pains. I really do.
Yeah, 6 months from now, even a year from now, I think everything will be ironed out and they'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, and one thing we didn't mention, which is particularly relevant, you attended these TV tapings.
Yes, we did. It was, aside from maybe one or two local matches in the distant past, this was my first like real big like wrestling show. So I was like thrilled to get to go to not just a wrestling like event, but like a TV taping too, which was a very specific type of experience.
Yeah, I think the last TV taping I attended was WCW Nitro sometime in 1999.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's been a while. I would have been like 14 at the time. And a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, like what?
Like back then, Macho Man was wrestling, and now Lanny Poffo is just showing up to give out birthday presents.
Great birthday presents. Fantastic birthday presents, but yes.
So we'll dive into... Well, okay. First thing first, before we talk about TV, before we talk about the Bound by Honor events this weekend, mere minutes before we went on the air here, I got an email... And it popped up, and I was shaking. And because all the email said was, Being the Elite has uploaded a new video. I've been having like withdrawal for the past couple of weeks. I've never smoked in my life, but now I have like a sense of how people feel when they're trying to quit cigarettes. Because those 2-3 weeks without the Being the Elite videos, it felt weird. It felt like I hadn't. It had only been like, what, maybe 2 or 3 weeks since finale, episode 100?
Yeah. And as someone who only started really watching maybe 2 months ago, it still felt weird for me not to like have that kind of that just Monday or like in some cases early Tuesday ritual.
Yeah. When I was watching this week's television, I generally had a thought of like, it feels like it's been like months since I've seen Kenny Omega. And it wasn't. I saw him at Supercard of Honor, which was 3 weeks ago. But in the world of wrestling, I don't know. I mean,
that's been the biggest adjustment for me. Getting really into wrestling is realizing how fast things move along and how little time can pass, and yet it feels so much time. Like you said, with Kenny's match at Supercard, I feel like it's been forever since I've seen him wrestle. I've seen the Golden Lovers wrestle. I feel like it's been a really long time, and it's only been a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks is nothing. But I guess especially for me now with Honor Club, I'm watching every live event they do. So it might have been only 3 weeks since I've seen Kenny Omega. But in that time, I've seen Josh Woods wrestle 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
so by
exactly.
Comparison...
Yeah, or seen like, you know, I mean, you've seen Marty wrestle a bunch of times. You've seen like the Bullet Club guys wrestle a bunch of times. We've seen a lot of these players like in multiple matches and multiple events. It still feels like the passage of time is like really, really fast.
Yeah, and I wonder, I'd love to ask some of these wrestlers about that. Like, how do you, like, we're living in the age of social media, of memes and stuff like that, you know, where something is huge 1 week and then a month later, that's ancient history. That's like something from the 60s or whatever. So is there extra pressure on you as a wrestler and as a performer it must be really hard to stay relevant in that sense and to stay fresh as a character.
That's a really good point. And I think social media is filling the gap where televised interviews and just like very careful, like public appearances used to back in like the 70s and 80s and 90s even. Now they have to use social media in a really thoughtful way to extend these rivalries, to extend these storylines, to build character, to fill in gaps that don't get filled in by, you know, matches themselves or appearances at events. So it's got to be a really delicate balance of trying not to oversaturate while still trying to remain like at the forefront and present for audiences.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but the guys who do it well. Like when I think of Twitter, Cody, Rusev, those guys like nail it out of the park. They maintain their characters while still being entertaining and funny, and like I'm never. Like, I don't feel overwhelmed by their activities, I guess.
Yeah, no, they're not posting all the time, but they're posting just enough to, like, remain at the front of their fans' brains while, like, still giving everyone space to breathe. Cody's really good at that. Cody's, like, Cody's management of his social media is just like mastery.
Yeah, he can post a photo of just himself cuddling with his dog, but still do it in character and like take a cheap shot at Flip Gordon at the same time. And
oh my, yeah, like having a like picture of just like a glass of like whiskey and a cigar is like perfectly on brand for Cody's character, and it takes so little, but it's like the perfect note to strike. He's really good at that.
Well, and see, that's why being the elite resonated with me so much, I think. I mean, it's funny, it's campy, but and it's really smartly written. There's tons of like foreshadowing, and they'll establish something in episode 83 and then come back to it in episode 92 in a way that you don't usually get that kind of storytelling in professional wrestling. Like WWE in particular gives you Saturday morning cartoon storytelling, which is if we remember something, great. If not, whatever. Nobody will care anyway.
Yeah, I kind of think of WWE storylines as high contrast, right? It's still that like really bold strikes of like good, bad, black, white. There's a lot of like high contrast storytelling where there's not a lot of like gray area, not a lot of definition in between. Whereas with being the elite, with the storylines that you're getting out of the Bullet Club, out of a lot of the people interacting, even with a lot of the non-Bullet Club ROH storylines, you're getting things that have a slightly deeper read. They go a little bit deeper. And I think that's why fans are like really connecting with them as much as they are. There's so much to go into there. But being the elite is a great example, is like the perfect example of it, because you just get so much content, but you're getting content that actually has a lot of weight to it.
And real sense of, we talk about this on my NXT show a lot, real sense of world building. And just, there's something that they capture the minutiae of just daily life really well. That the comparison that just came to mind for me is if WWE is Disney, being the elite is like Studio Ghibli.
Ah, that's a really good comparison. It's really good. And you do get a slightly higher grade of variety when you talk about Ghibli films.
Yeah, it's not black and white. Like, sorry to interrupt you, but my sister was just telling me recently that my three-year-old niece has been watching some Studio Ghibli in addition to Disney. And whenever they watch Ghibli, my niece is constantly asking, is that the bad guy? Is that the bad guy? Because Disney's conditioned her to be like, one of these characters has to be the villain, the black shades villain, you know, no in between, no nothing redeemable about them. Whereas Ghibli is not the case at all.
That's such a good point, though, because I'm like pointing, like that's how much I agree with that. Because like I am, so as part of the work that I do, I run a club for teenagers that we watch a lot of anime, we read manga, we talk a lot about like that particular realm of matter. And anime movies, Ghibli especially, they offer you a slightly more complicated animated film, even the ones that are intended for younger audiences. The reason that young children watching these things can't really necessarily discern between who are the good guys and who are the bad guys is because it's always shifting. It's not strictly defined as good and bad. And I think I really enjoy that about the storytelling we're seeing through ROH, through Bullet Club, through being the elite. We're seeing characters who have more layers than just this is a face, this is a heel, this is a good guy, this is a bad guy. We're seeing a lot more complicated relationship building in a way you don't really see in a lot of wrestling feds.
Yeah, you're seeing that especially on Being the Elite with characters like Hangman Page and the Young Bucks when they're being torn between Omega and Cody, and Matt Jackson is maybe the most multifaceted character on Being the Elite at the moment, I'd say, where he, you know, he's siding with Cody. He understands where Cody's coming from, but he loves Kenny, but he's frustrated with Kenny as well, and then he's never going to turn his back on Nick, but then it's so complicated.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to read it too, because you could see his connection with Cody being the savviness that the Bucks bring to like the business of wrestling with the merch and everything. Like they're very savvy businessmen in the world of wrestling. But you can see their connection with Kenny because not just like a friendship based on like all the things that friendships are typically based on, but for like a mutual respect of the heights of wrestling that both of them bring to the ring. They see in Kenny, and Kenny sees in them, the abilities that they are able to do, what they're able to achieve in the ring. And that's, so it's this complicated dynamic of the Jacksons being caught between like their business mindset and their artistic mindset, not to even mention all the factors in between of just like, you know, like love and friendship and trust and respect.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Yeah, some weeks I feel like I need a separate Being the Elite podcast just to talk about Being the Elite, because inevitably this was the same case when Lola was on the show. We'd spend 40 minutes talking about that 12-minute Being the Elite episode, and then we'd have 15 minutes left to talk about the hour-long ROH episode. And I apologize to the ROH wrestlers who didn't think to start their own YouTube show, but hey, it's your own fault.
Well, it looks like if you wanted to start that Being a Elite podcast, you will be able to.
Yeah, maybe we'll stick a pin in that. Email us and let us know if there's a demand for that. So if you haven't seen it yet, it wasn't even a full episode this week. It was a 2-minute. It was a 2-minute video. It was kind of like the Marvel post credit scene, right? Movie's over. Yeah. We had the finale, episode 100, but then. Here's a little teaser. And it was still, it was melancholy. It was bittersweet. You know, we see the Bullet Club is fractured. The Being Elite cast is fractured. Everybody looks a little sad. Cody mm-hmm. adjusting his tie. Kenny and Coda sitting over dinner. Flip finally is the one who says, you know, we need to get the game back together. But I think that was what brought up the Ghibli idea in my head, too. It's just these little things, like we just see Hangman Page at the sink washing his hands, and it's clear he's trying to wash off the guilt of murdering Joey Ryan, or at the very yes. least, badly assaulting Joey Ryan. He might be alive still, or he might be up in heaven with Adam Cole. I don't know. But just little poignant scenes like that that you never see in any other wrestling promotion.
You really don't. And they've gotten so well at using those visuals in an effective way so that they can make a 2-minute video feel like they can make you feel something from this, like 2-minute.
Yeah, it feels like a movie trailer.
It's so well timed too. If you think about how sad, I mean, I tend to read into this a little bit, but the timing of it is just syncs up with, you know, Infinity War.
See, I haven't seen it yet, but I know right away that I had the same vibe.
Yeah, exactly. And you were saying like the end of credit sequence, but I was almost thinking like, you know, the year ahead of a major movie when they release that like teaser trailer that's like only like 30 seconds long. Oh, yeah. That's the feel for me, is this like kind of enticement of like, stay tuned, things are coming. Don't walk away. Don't give up on us. Remember us, because we're going to come back. We're going to give you what you want.
So Flip's Nick Fury, and it's Bullet Club Assemble.
Yes, exactly. Although it's got to be Flip, huh?
I don't know. Sometimes you need an outside party, right? Two friends have a big fight. You need a mutual friend to be the one to bring them back together.
Sure, and they are definitely kind of pushing Flip as this guy, like protector of the small and like, you know, advocate of friendship. And
plus, he's a psychiatrist or something, right? So, there you go. So, Being the Elite is back. It didn't say when, but the video closed with that literally text message: Being the Elite will be back. Presumably, hopefully sooner than later, hopefully like a month from now, not, you know, September around All In.
Oh, wow. That would be real, real mean if they made us wait that long.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they've been good. They don't have they've never had a set date. You know, it's often Mondays, but it's never been like, oh, every Monday at noon we release the new episode. So you're always kind of left wondering, like, when am I going to get that pop-up message in my inbox saying there's a new video?
Yeah, and that's kind of a great thing about it, too, because it's produced by themselves. They release it themselves. We can be patient for it. I mean, it's always, you know, it's a struggle to wait for it and be patient. But it's also fun not to have the complete assurance that it's going to be out at a specific, you know, day and time. Like, there's always that fun, like, anticipation of it.
It was a pleasant surprise. And pro wrestling in general is, I've always favored one of the, I've always said, like, surprises, one of the best parts of wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. If they can predict what you're about to do, if your audience is, like, 10 steps ahead of you, then that's not a great place to be in. That's not a great position to be in.
Yeah. So on the note of unexpected stuff, Bound by Honor this weekend, we had two events live from Florida available on Honor Club. Friday night in West Lakeland, Saturday night in West Palm Beach. I don't know your Florida towns. Your country has so many cities. I can't keep track of them all. My country is bigger than yours in terms of size, but we only have like two cities per province. It's pretty, and then just a lot of forest. But yeah, so Bound by Honor, lots to talk about there. We won't go into match by match. Just kind of focus on some of the bigger takeaways, in my opinion, at least. One that popped up both nights, Kelly Klein, Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah. That was something that they set in place a little bit before. They had their altercation at Masters of Craft.
Yeah, they've been feuding kind of for like a year and a half now, it seems.
Yeah, they've been it was kind of a little bit like simmer, and now it's like definitely above surface. And most recently the call out in Masters of Craft, and so now that they had their match on Friday and then a repeat kind of on Saturday.
Yeah, so Friday night they had an actual match. Deonna won with a pinfall. Oh, it was like a jackknife pin. I think. Yeah. Now I remember. Kelly went for end of the match, her submission move, and Deonna turned into a jackknife pin and got the surprise pin. And then they had a pull apart afterwards with referees and security all having to hold them back from each other. And then Saturday night, Deonna beats Ava Story.
Yep.
And Kelly jumps her after the match and beats her down again. So I like that this feud is continuing because they've been at each other on Women of Honor Wednesdays and other mediums for a while now. I'd have to go back and check records, but I'd say at least a year, I'm guessing. And, well, I was surprised that they didn't meet in the Women of Honor tournament. I thought that was going to happen there for sure in the finals. Didn't work out that way. So I like that the feud is continuing here. And I particularly like that this, if this feud is continuing, that means there's going to be more than one feud happening in the women's division at the same time.
Which is great for the women's division because they need that. They need to build their stories. They need to build the storylines for their various wrestlers. Because it's been, I mean, they're still in such a nascent stage. So that's going to do a lot to really push them over. I remember one of the things that got me into Women of Honor, into like Deonna specifically too, was watching a few matches with her and Karen Q and really enjoying that rivalry, enjoying that dynamic, enjoying, I just generally enjoy Karen Q as a heel a lot. But this growing feud, this they're pushing this feud now with Kelly and Deonna, and the more feuds in Women of Honor, the better, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely at a point, because they weren't on TV, they were on Women of Honor Wednesdays, they're on YouTube, but not on the regular weekly television for so long. Even I've been watching ROH television weekly for 6-7 years, something like that, way back since the days of American Wolves and Scum and guys like that. And I still feel like I barely know a lot of the women in the division. We'll get to this week's TV later, but when Jenny Rose showed up on TV, I was like, oh, is that, that's what Jenny Rose looks like. I know the name, couldn't put a face to her. So I love that. Yeah, it looks like we're going to get multiple feuds. Sumi's going to be defending her title against somebody, feuding with them. Kelly and Deonna doing their thing in another area. And, you know, even WWE doesn't do that a lot. Lately, they've been a bit better, but there was a long period of time where on SmackDown, you'd have a feud for the women's title, and that was it. That was the only time you saw any women on TV that week. And they they had 2 hours of television to fill.
Yeah, I think they're adding a title into Women of Honor is going to do a lot for building those storylines, because it looks like there's going to be lots of feuds over that title, even amongst those who don't have it. And Deanna and Kelly's rivalry, their growing animosity is fueled just as much by the, like, how they neither of them succeeded in the tournament. I think that that is going to do a lot, just having a title to work towards.
Yeah, and the idea that, well, we'll talk about this later on as well, but wins and losses really matter a lot in ROH. They're treated as, you know, somebody who wins a lot. Hey, whenever somebody picks up a couple wins in a row on TV, the commentators are quick to acknowledge it and quick to say, hey, that was a pretty big win. That should probably put this person in line for a title shot. Mm-hmm. So it's that idea as well, is even if Kelly and Deanna aren't in the title picture right now, every time, every victory one of them gets over the other is making a case for why they should be next in line for the title next month, month after.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the wins and losses, like I was saying, Motor City Machine Guns, not been winning a lot lately. They lost the titles to Briscoes. They lost a rematch to the Briscoes Friday night, Bound by Honor. And then they got a surprise upset, losing to Coast Saturday.
Yeah, it bums me out, honestly, because I really like MCMG. Like, I really like the Motor City Machine Guns. And I think that, like, they just have such a great past working relationship. They've done great matches. Seeing them fall to Coast was kind of a bummer, admittedly. Not that I don't appreciate the talents of Coast to Coast. I thought that match was pretty evenly set, and I do think that it was, like, paced well. I thought there was good dynamic shifts in that match, but I was really surprised to see them fall to Coast.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised to see them fall, because Coast to Coast have been getting a big push lately. I mean, they're the last team to get a victory over War Machine before War Machine became War Raiders and headed to NXT. Yeah. So right away, that's a sign that somebody sees something in LSG and Shaheem Ali. But going into Friday night, we haven't seen Motor City Machine Guns in a while, I think. Maybe not even since they lost the titles. But going into the show, all of a sudden, Ian and Colt are talking before the match, early on in the night, saying Sabin and Shelley have been discussing, and maybe things aren't working out, and maybe Machine Guns should call it a day as a tag team. And if they lose tonight, and they did lose, and then the next night they show up and they lose again. So, I don't know. But even Colt Cabana said on commentary, kind of, commentators do a good job of being smart and saying what the fans are thinking, I find. Mm-hmm. Unlike WWE commentators, again, who act like they've never watched a wrestling event before. Anytime anybody does anything, they're shocked that this has happened. And it's like, this is pro wrestling. Like, this happens once a week. But my point was, Colt Cabana said, like, I don't know, like, do you really see Chris Sabin as, like, a singles wrestler in ROH? And that's, I don't know. Do you, Em?
I don't. I guess maybe I'm just, like, I'm a mark for these guys, but I would like to see Motor City stay as a tag team. And just based off of this record alone, I'm not convinced that there isn't a comeback story rather than a dissolution of the tag team.
Yeah, and they drew, I think Rick Abani did draw that comparison with Coast to Coast, because that's where they were back in November, December. They hadn't won, they lost for months and months and months, and they said, you know what, one more match, if we can't win this one, we should call it a day. And they did. They got that huge win over War Machine, and they've been on the upswing ever since. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Machine Guns go a couple different ways here. If they break up and go singles wrestlers, I don't know. They could be interesting in the TV title picture, but doesn't seem like big dividends there. They stay together as a tag team, then what? Do they turn heel? I mean, that's not really...
That's not plans. Really... I'd have a hard time seeing heel Motor City Machine Gun.
Yeah, so then, I don't know. Do they get maybe they need a makeover. Maybe they just need, like, a new look and... a new philosophy.
I mean, or they need a rival. They need an antagonist.
Yeah, it's too bad Brett is injured, because them and Best Friends, if they had put together a proper program between the two of them, they'd be pretty evenly matched in that.
But yeah, Beretta's injury has left a gap in a lot of potential storylines, and that's been something that ROH has been in a good state of compensating for with other storylines, with other their matchups, but that has left a gap of a lot of potential.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't have any bright ideas as to where this machine gun story is heading, but I like that at the very least, there's some sort of story there. We didn't just have them lose to the Briscoes, lose to Coast to Coast. That's it. We're acknowledging these losses are part of a pattern, and acknowledging that Saban and Shelley are aware of this and know something needs to change.
Yeah, and there's attention being paid to them right now. I mean, it's maybe attention paid in the negative because of a loss record, but there is attention. I think that attention it's important to take note of the fact that there's a lens on them right now.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. Someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
And after the loss to Coast, Alex Shelley immediately headed up the ramp in a huff. Like, I can't believe we lost again. Saban lingered a little bit, slapped hands with LSG and Shaheem and said, like, you know, good match, good on you, before leaving. So, right away, different personalities. There are different approaches to this loss.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're definitely getting a storyline of tension between the two guys. We're getting of differing expectations, possibly, or someone having higher expectations than the other. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with that.
Hopefully it's not just as clear cut as, you know, next week Shelley attacks Saban and says, it's your fault we lost, and then they feud. Because, I don't know, we've seen that so many times. They deserve better.
Yeah.
Maybe they can do like the Addiction, find somebody else and go after the six-man titles.
That's not a bad idea.
The Addiction found Scorpio Sky, and they've raised Sky's stature a lot by partnering with him, and now they're champions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'm putting us both on the spot, but anybody jump out to you as who could be a potential third machine gun?
Well, haven't they worked with Jonathan Gresham?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were a Search and Destroy.
Yeah.
With Gresham, and he's not doing... I don't know. I mean, is it too... We just mentioned the Addiction went out and got Scorpio Sky. Is it
too obvious?
Is it wary of us to be like, hey, they should get a bald black guy too?
But Jonathan Gresham to me is like a really good counterpart for them, because they have a style that would complement Gresham's more technical abilities. Even his size, I think, would be an advantage for them, since they're average for wrestler size, and he's a smaller guy. He can give them a bit of a flying advantage that they don't necessarily have.
Yeah, they're flashier. He's more ground based and submission, so strengths balance each other out.
Yeah,
they have strong personalities. He's a little muted sometimes, so maybe they could bring something out of him.
Absolutely. And he can provide a like technical aspect to the wrestling that they currently miss that would be really well served in that.
All right. So I'm just going to assume now that that's happening. We just thought of it. It's happening.
I would love to see that. That would actually
be next week, Machine Guns and Gresham against the Kingdom. And we're off. Also, Bound by Honor, one of the big surprises of the two nights, and it's not related to any stories per se, but wrestling legend Lanny Poffo showed up.
Yeah, he did.
So for people who are younger than, I don't know, myself, Lanny Poffo, known as the Genius for a time, also known as Leaping Lanny Poffo, also known as Macho Man Randy Savage's brother. And he showed up. It was Jay Lethal's birthday yesterday, I guess, right?
Yeah, happy birthday, Jay Lethal.
Yeah, he's, I want to say he's 34 now, which is, maybe that'll surprise some people, because he's always booked as, like, the veteran in ROH, so you're half expecting to find out that he's, like, 46 or something.
That's, my jaw just dropped, because that means he's a year older than me. That's absolutely absurd. Okay, sorry, just shocked.
You're 33?
Yes.
Me too!
Hey! So Jay Lethal is 1 year older than us, and
listeners. Yeah. We're very young. Emily gets carded all the time at the bars. I chew bubblegum and skip jump rope.
He gets billed as this veteran, and he is a vet to a certain degree. I mean, he's done everything you can think of with ROH. I mean, he has this legacy at this point in ROH. And so, yeah, hearing that he's like just turned like 34, like that's crazy. That's just testament though of how quickly you can establish yourself as a pro wrestler once you hit a certain period of your career.
Yeah.
And how quickly you can evolve as more than just like, you know, a popular wrestler or a good wrestler or a well-known wrestler into something that is like, you know, a standard almost.
Yeah. And what a career he's had. I mean, we had this a couple weeks ago. He was on Coleman's Pulpit and Caprice was kind of snidely just reading off his Wikipedia, but you know, he brought up like, you've wrestled AJ Styles, you've wrestled Ric Flair, you've wrestled like Kevin Nash, all these big names in the industry. And even this, so this segment with Lanny, it was Lethal's birthday the next night, which at this point is yesterday, and he brought out Lanny Poffo. Poffo talked about, you know, he said like, you are the best wrestler on the planet today at keeping Macho Man's legacy alive. And he was, of course, alluding to Jay Lethal's Black Machismo character from TNA. Mm-hmm. When he emulated Macho Man Randy Savage, he did the voice, he had the tassels on his sleeves. So I looked that up on Wikipedia. That was 2008. That was 10 years ago. Black Machismo. But, I mean, Lethal's always kept that alive. He still does Hail to the King in his matches these days, the Macho Man mm-hmm. elbow drop. So mm-hmm. he's never left that part of him aside.
And yeah, even his like yellow boots and his like wrestling briefs, like there's certain style elements to that that are like a callback to Randy Savage, callback to just that aesthetic.
I assume every wrestler has one person in particular that just meant the most to them out of everybody. I mean, you watch mm-hmm. a Dolph Ziggler match, you know, I bet you Dolph Ziggler was into Shawn Michaels. Like, it's just, sometimes it's so obvious and, like, screams it like that. Other times, not so much. I know the Young Bucks love Hogan. You don't, mm-hmm. you might not see the comparison right away, but then kind of it comes out to you.
For the Young Bucks, I feel like Hogan, but also the Rock and Roll Express. Is that the right team?
The Rockers, maybe?
No. I have messed this up.
I'd say the Rockers for sure. They do the super kick like Michaels and...
Yeah, I had a good reference that I completely, go ahead.
No, I said, oh, well.
Oh, well, yeah.
So Poffo gave Lethal a pair of Macho Man sunglasses as a birthday present. It seemed pretty genuine. Like, I thought I saw Lethal tearing up for a minute there. And yeah. Then we got a fun little Black Machismo transformation. He went back into doing the voice. Had a match with Shane Taylor, beat him with a flying elbow. They played Pomp and Circumstance after the match.
Yeah, and for me, it takes someone like Jay Lethal to make a match with Shane Taylor interesting. I don't find Shane Taylor a very compelling wrestler to watch for the most part. He's done tag matches and things that are watchable, but as a singles wrestler, I'm just not a huge fan. So for, you know, in Jay Lethal's typical style, he like elevated Shane Taylor in that moment.
Yeah. And it wasn't, I try to make a concerted effort not to reference WWE too often or to make comparisons, but sometimes I just can't help it. I don't know. They're the measuring stick in professional wrestling these days to an extent, I guess. They're the mainstream. I don't know. My point was, when Taylor came out and interrupted the birthday celebrations and called Poffo an old man who was riding his brother's coattails, you knew that was leading to a match. But in some other promotions, that would have been a 30-second squash match. Bell rings, Lethal hits like two elbows, an axe handle, and the match is over at the end. Mm-hmm. But no, they had like a full competitive match. And Taylor was in control for a while. And when Lethal beat him, it made them both look better because it wasn't a squash match. Because Taylor looked good for holding his own for a while there and looking like he might win. Lethal looked good for beating somebody who's actually a threat and not just, you know, stepping on an anthill.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and so, you know, it wasn't a huge segment. It's not going to play into any stories. Lanny Poffo's not going to be in his corner permanently going forward. But it was just a fun little thing and a surprise. And again, I like a good surprise when I'm watching my wrestling.
Yeah, it was a welcome treat in the midst of a show that had a lot of momentum to it. So it didn't feel like a detracting surprise or like a slowdown. It felt like very much something that was like an added treat.
Yeah, as opposed to, say, Punishment Martinez chokeslamming Hangman Page through a table.
What was that?
That was, they had this match announced, and I was sitting there going, I don't know who's going to win that one, because they both kind of are on a roll right now. And sure enough, no match. Punishment just chair to the back, chokeslam through the timekeeper's table, left Page coughing up blood. On social media afterwards, Flip had to like glue Page's head back together, they were saying.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you got to assume this is the start of a feud. Page isn't just going to say, oh, well, and then they go their separate ways. Like, they're going to meet it again in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing that's so. I think that there is a concerted effort into trying to build some rivalries between guys who are in Bullet Club and guys who are not in Bullet Club in ROH. Because I think that Ring of Honor, the, you know, people behind it, like, they have a keen awareness that right now Bullet Club's stock is just a little bit higher than maybe those who are strictly Ring of Honor only. And
Bullet,
I think building
Bullet Club stock is higher than 90% of people in professional wrestling these days.
Yeah, exactly. So building rivalries between their Ring of Honor guys and the Bullet Club / Ring of Honor guys, it's smart to do. And if they can do it well, if you're going to set up a rivalry, that's fine. But this was such a disappointment, disappointing, like, lack of match.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe that's why it was immediately followed by this segment with Lethal and Poffo. Was to kind
That's
of
true.
Like, kind of bring it back up. Like, I know that was a disappointing surprise, but here's a fun surprise.
You know, that's a good point. You know.
And well, the other kind of surprise for me of the night was main event 8-man tag, the ROH champions against Bullet Club. To me, this felt out of nowhere, but lots of tension between Cody and Marty Scurll.
Yes. There's a lot that I can't say, given that I was at the TV taping and there was stuff in that taping. So there's definitely something that they're playing with there. And there's actually been promos released on social media that have like the dogs were doing their backstage interviews throughout Bound by Honor. And they at one point had a clip where they like hit Cody up for beer money. Basically, and Cody just goes on a tear about how he's going to be, you know, world champion and like he deserves it and no one else has earned it and no one else deserves it. And he shouts out Marty as a person who doesn't deserve that title. Hmm. So they're playing with this rivalry. They're building this. I don't know exactly where they're going to go with it, but it's definitely something that they're setting in motion.
Yeah. See, when this happened at Bound by Honor, I right away assumed that it meant something happened at the TV tapings, which already took place, but which haven't aired yet. Again, continuity issues for ROH, kind of. But for people, I mean, for most of the audience, those of us who weren't in Pittsburgh, this was the first time we saw any of this tension between the two of them. They were both on good terms with the Bucks, taking in and out with the Bucks, not so much with each other. Finish comes with Marty's going to break Dalton's fingers again. Cody grabs him and hits a crossroads instead, tells Marty to cover. Marty won't. Lots of things. I mean, ends with Cody pinning the champion. That always means something in ROH.
Yes.
Anytime anybody gets a pinfall over the champion, even if it's just a tag match or an eight-man tag, it counts for something.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, and especially since, you know, the last, you know, when Marty and Dalton matched up in the Defy or Deny match at Masters of Craft, like it was Marty who came out vigilant, and for Cody to get that win in this case, that means something.
Yeah, and they've been, commentators again, doing a good job of reminding us that even though it's been 4 months since Cody lost the title to Dalton, he never got his rematch. He's technically owed a rematch at some point. Marty, meanwhile, won another title shot in Defy or Deny. So they both got their cases made as to why they should be the next one to challenge Dalton for the title. And with tension between them now, all signs point to triple threat.
Yeah, that'll be... I would not be surprised to see that in the next, like, 6 months.
Yeah, even... on television this week, Marty had a backstage promo and specifically said, "I want my title shot, best in the world, June 29th. I mean, June 29th, that's 2 weeks, 2 months of build, which you could argue the logistics in the sense of, like, why would Marty want to wait 2 months to get his title shot? That's a long time. Why doesn't he want to be champion now? But we won't worry about that. He wants to win it on the big stage. He's got his record, his million-dollar record career to worry about for the next month anyway.
That's right. That's right. And in wrestling rivalry, you know, language, like, "I'll see you in 2 months" is the equivalent of, like, "I'll see you outside tomorrow."
Yeah. Meet me outside the bar as soon as I finish working 8 weeks. So, yeah, those are the big highlights from Bound by Honor, I'd say. And then a lot of that carried over into this week's television. Finally, we got some post-Supercard TV. Again, it felt like it had been ages since Supercard of Honor, but they did a lot of video packages on the show this week, recapping the Bound by Honor big matches. So it helped it feel a little bit more fresh. And just the fact that I was getting new stories and new developments since the pay-per-view just... Oh, I really love this week's TV. It reminded me how much I love ROH TV most weeks. The last couple of weeks, not so much, because it was feeling like, you know, leftovers. Whereas this is like some nice, fresh, hot food right off the stove. So
yeah, honestly, that's what it felt like going to the TV taping, too, is just like actually getting to see like the new storylines that were, or the new, just the new material that was going to get onto the televised broadcast and feeling refreshed from that. We had the fortune, the TV taping happened a week after Supercard of Honor. So we didn't have a huge lag time between when Supercard happened and when we got to see this stuff that is now only hitting the air. But so I can only imagine like how long it's felt for those who, you know, didn't get to see the taping.
Yeah, and how many, probably 3 episodes were taped?
4 episodes.
4. So a month from now, you're going to be watching footage of an event you attended 6 weeks earlier.
Yeah. Which is probably my memory for it is already a little fuzzy, so like the live memory of it. So I'm fully anticipating like 4 weeks from now, like watching an episode and being like, "Oh," and surprised, even though I saw it happen live.
Well, the good thing is it gives you 4 weeks of TV to try to find yourself in the crowd.
That's true.
To freeze frame and play "Where's Waldo" and figure out where you are when Silas Young is flipping off the crowd. Main event this week, television title, Silas Young, Flip Gordon. Flip earned the title. It was, again, a little convoluted, but a couple weeks ago or a month ago on TV, Battle Royal came down to Flip and Shane. Flip Gordon and Shane Taylor then had a singles match. Flip won, earned a TV title shot, got it here tonight against Silas. What were your thoughts on the match?
I was actually, going into the taping, I wasn't thrilled that like one of the big main event matches was going to be a Flip Gordon match, but it did kind of excite me to have him match up against Silas Young because they're very different styles. Not even just talking wrestling, but they're very different physical styles, very different character styles, different aspects of pro wrestling, period. So I think and see how that dynamic played out and I was disappointed, honestly. I thought it was a really good match. I thought that Sung brought out a kind of more raw energy from Flip than we maybe see, a little bit more like visceral, a little more just physically pure style from Flip rather than just a lot of the like flying tricks that we see with him. I was pretty pleased with this.
Yeah, Styles always wrestles a really, I guess aggressive is the word, but I don't know. He always feels like he's in a fight. Like he is, like, even when he's doing wrestling moves, the kind that you wouldn't do in a bar fight, he still, to an extent, feels like he's in a bar fight. Like he's actually trying to hit you. At near the end of the match, he grabbed Flip by the ear and yanked him to his feet, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I like
he does
that.
He does all these, like, really just, like, kind of aggressive is the right word for it. He's, like aggressive and kind of, I don't know. He seems to be powered by the same things that you would put into an actual fight, which is why I think it seems like a fight. Like you said, it's not moves that you would use if you were actually fighting someone for real, but he seems to pull from that same energy. So whereas other guys seem to use the like excitement or the adrenaline, like he's using anger. Anger and rage come from Silas. There's definitely that. And like it comes out in his moves on people. It comes out in the way he treats people in the ring. It comes out in like the sarcastic and condescending way he has like the audience, like he like claps for his opponent. There's all this like dirtiness to his fighting without like straight out dirty tricks.
Yeah, Silas by far definitely one of my top three ROH guys. Like I always enjoy his matches. I always look forward to him with a microphone, see what see where his performance are going to go. I mean, his feud with Dalton Castle, one of my favorite ROH feuds of the past year or two, when they were fighting over custody of the boys. That was great stuff, and he was teaching the boys how to be men, teaching them how to like pee at urinals and how to change a tire and stuff like that.
Whenever you can get Silas like playing up his like last real man shtick, yeah. But with just like a hint of silliness, he does it really well because he never drops the character all the way. There's not really a wink to it, but even when it is kind of outright silly like that, I have grown to really appreciate that style.
Yeah. So solid match. It went two commercial breaks, so it was a pretty long one by ROH television standards. Silas got the clean win. Another refreshing thing. Heels, they're not afraid to give their heels some clean wins now and then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
and Silas,
it doesn't hurt Flip, right? Like, he held his own against the TV champion. He didn't win, but he looked good in the process.
Yeah, Flip didn't look bad at all. Didn't look weak. I have to begrudgingly give respect to Flip Gordon in these matches, in that like he's going up against guys who have these type of styles that could very easily overwhelm him, or he could end up looking a little silly in comparison, just like kind of flipping out of things, like spinning out of stuff, jumping and et cetera. But he's working against people who are bringing out better aspects of his wrestling, and he's meeting those expectations, and he's doing pretty well with it. I remember actually giving a lot of respect. Like, I have a lot of respect for that match, having seen that live, having seen it on television. The energy there sustained. He did really well in taking the blows. It was a good match.
Yeah. One thing really stood out to me. I'm always quick to give praise to Ian Riccoboni and Colt Cabana. Well, it wasn't Colt Cabana this week. It was BJ Whitmer for these tapings.
Yes.
But I'm always quick to give props to the commentary team in ROH, whoever it is. I mean, Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino, big fan of when they were hosting the show too. Little thing in this match that I've never heard before, but I loved it, is Silas had been knocked to ringside. And Ian said, I can't remember his exact words, but he said, we have to go to commercial break. Match will continue when we get back. And then Flip ran the ropes looking for a suicide dive. And Ian said, wait, hold on. Flip hit the suicide dive, big cheer, threw Silas in the ring, and he was on such a roll that Ian said, the producers are telling me we're going to hold off on going to break. And they came back in the ring, and Flip went for 450, missed, landed on his feet. Silas hit something, and then when things slowed down a little bit again, then they went to commercials. But this just blew my mind. I mean, pretty much everybody knows these ROH episodes aren't happening live for the simple fact that they air in different markets on different days. Like, I watched this at 6 p.m. on Sunday. I knew they weren't live in the Pittsburgh Arena 6 p.m. Sunday evening. But they treated it as if it was live. They acted as if, like, this is happening right now. We were going to go to commercials, but we were afraid the match was going to end at this moment. So we decided we're going to wait. We'll go to commercials in, like, a minute instead. And they held off. And that's just... it's such a tiny little thing, but it made it feel so unscripted and so just live and energetic in the moment. And I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't overuse something like that. So they utilize something like that only when the match itself has the energy to justify it. And this match absolutely did.
Yeah, or I can't remember if it was last week, not last week, somewhat recently, maybe during when they did the Tag Team Gauntlet. Again, they had Riccoboni say something to the extent of, if this match goes long and doesn't finish, you know, we've only got 10, 12 minutes left in the show. If this match goes longer than that, you can watch the rest of the, we'll have the rest of the match up for you available on Honor Club, kind of thing. It didn't. The match finished before, you know, in the hour television time limit, like matches always do. But the idea was planted that maybe it won't. Maybe not every match will finish exactly within this set one-hour window that we have, which is logical. I mean, you achieve the same effect by having time limit on matches, saying this is a 15-minute time limit, but still the idea that this isn't some intricately scripted and plotted out thing with a calendar and a timer on it, when most people, kayfabe alert, know that it is. I don't know. I love these little things that ROH tries to make it seem more real and more believable.
Yeah, it's a testament to the type of product that they want to give their fans and their audience over, say, like WWE, over even say like other like feds with broadcasts. I think that ROH really wants to maintain an aspect of their product that is a little bit raw, a little bit unfinished, a little bit like, again, always with surprises.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Also on the show this week, first appearance of Women of Honor champion, Sumi Sakai. And she had a match against Stella Gray. Jenny Rose was on commentary. Sumi defeated Stella. Jenny Rose comes down into the ring. And a little back and forth. Basically, Jenny says that she wants to be the first person to challenge for the Women of Honor Championship. She plays some footage from Manhattan Mayhem where there's miscommunication. They collided with each other. The fans instantly booed. You can attest to this. Thinking, heel turn. Jenny's going to turn heel on her right here and attack her. She didn't. But seeds are planted for sure for that in the future. I mean, she wouldn't shake Sumi's hand afterwards. Sumi didn't have a lot to say here. I get the feeling she's more fluent in English than some Japanese wrestlers, but maybe not as much as you might expect, considering she's been living in the States for like 10 years.
A lot of these wrestlers, they understand, a lot of the Japanese wrestlers who are, they are fluent in understanding the language, but their like speaking skills, they're either still learning, or they're very competent speakers and they are just not confident in their abilities. So sometimes in their ring, they'll prefer to say less simply just not to embarrass themselves, even though they likely wouldn't. So it's very possible that Sumi's actually like a very fluent English speaker. She just may prefer to not use it so much in the ring.
I get that, because I can read Spanish pretty good, but ask me to speak it and I'll be much quieter and slower than I would normally be. So Sumi's basic response was, Jenny, I love you. I don't want to fight you, but for the title, I will. Mm-hmm. And they had previously announced at Bound by Honor this weekend, Sumi's first title defense would be in Chicago. War of the Worlds, May 13th. So presumably, Jenny's going to get her title shot then.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning with Jenny at the taping. So during the taping, this is not wrestling. This is a different sport. The Pittsburgh Penguins were in the playoffs against the Philadelphia Flyers. And Jenny Rose is from Philadelphia, so she got kind of booed almost immediately because of where she's from. Yeah. Because Pittsburgh fans are just that petty.
That's wrestling 101. You're not from around here, you suck.
Exactly. So the booing on Jenny was just as much powered by like people being behind Sumi and also not liking where Jenny is from.
Sumi had the advantage in that there are no Japanese teams in the NHL.
We are very neutral about Japanese hockey. It's true.
Yeah. No, we had Toronto this past weekend had the Leafs and the Bruins playing against each other the same day as the Blue Jays and the Red Sox. So if anybody from Boston showed up in town that weekend, they're getting it. Yeah, so again, like we were talking about earlier with Kelly and Deanna, I like multiple feuds happening in the division at the same time. I like that Sumi's first title defense is going to be against Jenny Rose. Not one of the big money matches. Jenny hasn't been established as one of the top tier names in the same way that Tennille Dashwood has, or Deanna and Kelly, or even Brandy per se. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that they're not going right into a rematch with Kelly Klein or right into Sumi and Tennille. She's just won the title. Give her a chance to have this shorter feud with somebody, elevate Jenny in the process. Same thing we saw with Silas and Flip. Jenny mm-hmm. probably not going to win the title, but it'll increase her TV time. It'll increase her presence in the division. And, maybe I'll get to learn what Jenny Rose's finishing move is. Cause I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it will get – it's just the whole great thing about adding a title into the Women of Honors, just into that world, because now you have storylines to build about someone having it and needing to protect it and defend it. You have people who lost the title shot early, like in its first incarnation, and now are, working their way back to it. You have someone like Jenny who like has nothing to lose by going for a title shot early on. She only has stuff to gain. She only has, audience to gain and attention to gain because of this. So it's really savvy to have that title. And now just as this like movable piece that we can eventually see change hands. We can eventually see and invoke and inspire other rivalries. And Sumi holding it in the center is such a good person to have that title first off, because she's kind of a neutral person just in general, like audiences like her. She got a pop in Pittsburgh. I think in general she has a favorable response from audiences. She doesn't have any real good rivalries right at the moment, building lots of little rivalries for her to take down in defense of the title is a good way to grow her character while growing others at the same time.
And maybe the biggest takeaway from this segment, a lot of us during the Women of Honor tournament expressed the fear of what happens to the division once the tournament's over. Are Women of Honor going to be on TV on a regular basis? If not every week, at least every other week? Are they going to go back to just being on YouTube? We see them once every couple of months. How is the division as a whole going to be treated? So this was huge. I mean, This is first episode at the post pay-per-view tapings. They're there. They get a whole segment. And the Women of Honor title was treated no differently from the TV. This is exactly the same way the TV title would have been treated, or the tag titles, or any of the other belts.
Yeah, their Ring of Honor is going all in on this, on the women's division, on Women of Honor, and it's really good to see. It's not just confident and competent storytelling. It's a promise to those of us who want to see that on the televised broadcast and not just on Women of Honor Wednesdays, not just online. It's a promise to us that we're going to see more of that in the televised broadcast. We're going to see more of that in the pay-per-views. It's thrilling for me because I want to see this division get better and better. And I think that this is a strong step in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, Sumi's position right now, not pretty much the same as Dalton's at the beginning of January, where new champion, babyface, top of the division, and multiple people are saying, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for that title. Mm-hmm. In Dalton's case, it was Punishment. It was Lethal. It was Taven. It was Cody. In Sumi's case, she's got Jenny Rose. She's got Kelly Klein. We haven't seen Tennille in a while, but I'm sure she'll be back sooner than later. And all of that just, you know, the more people who are talking about, I want that title, the more that title feels like a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
By comparison, opening contest of this week's episode didn't really feel like a big deal. This was I thought this was a very weird choice to be the first match of the post Supercard tapings, because it was Chucky T against Josh Woods. Neither guy is exactly lighting up the charts lately. I mean, Best Friends were kind of directionless even before Beretta got injured. After he got injured, Chucky's only shown up like two, maybe three times on TV since then. He only had one victory recently for this match. Josh Woods lost for a long time, finally picked up a win against Shane Taylor Friday night in his hometown, Then lost Saturday, and then lost this match. So I don't know what that means for Josh.
I don't know. For Chucky T, I know that, you know, he does split his time between Ring of Honor and New Japan quite a bit. So I've seen him in some New Japan matchups. So he's a fixture on a lot of their, you know, on their specials with their tag teams. But as far as Ring of Honor goes, I just don't know where the game is right now for them. Like, what are they going to do with what are they doing with Best Friends while we wait for Beretta to heal? Like, does that tag team continue where it left off when Beretta comes back? Like, there's a lot of questions that don't necessarily have like really strong answers or anyone really waiting for those answers. So I'm not really sure what they're doing with them. With Josh Woods, I feel like there's something there. I feel like there is there's a wrestling story there that they can play with, but they just don't know how to use it yet. He doesn't have a real defined character yet. He doesn't have a record that has anyone really paying that much attention to him. So they're going to need to either do a push of him winning or just get him, like, he's going to have to build some kind of brand for himself if there's going to be any kind of notice paid to him.
Yeah. So, I mean, my takeaway with this Chucky T winning makes me think that they are going to start doing something with him.
Yeah.
As a singles wrestler, I guess, because Beretta wasn't even in his corner. He was just out there by himself, but the fans responded positively, probably in part due to his New Japan work. Do they give him a small push? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Chucky T and Silas Young for the TV title at some point in the next month or two, even if it's just on TV. Mm-hmm. He could slot into that sort of mid-card division. Even though I'll admit, I've never seen Chuck Taylor wrestle outside of ROH. So I'm definitely one of the people who, I don't know, I'm not that familiar with him. I don't really know why people were so excited when he showed up in ROH, and ROH never answered that question for me. They acted as if they do this a lot. Somebody from an outside promotion shows up and they act as if you know who this guy is. It's blah, blah, blah from CMLL. He's great. And I'm like, I don't watch CMLL. I watch ROH. Tell me the ROH viewer who he is and why I should care about him. So Chucky suffered from that for me at first. But I don't dislike him. I'm just waiting to find out who he is. Josh Woods, I feel like I know him by now. He's been around for over a year. He's just, never really picked up any signature wins. I think his problem seems to be that there's just nobody below him for him to beat, really. Like, yeah. you look at the ROH hierarchy, and guys below Josh Woods at this point, it's a slim list. It's Shane Taylor, it's Cheeseburger, it's the Dogs. I guess Joey Dadiego would fit in there if he was around anymore. He's on the roster. He hasn't been seen on television in like 9 months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ROH wants to give Woods victories. They just don't have anybody that they can. I don't know.
I mean, what can they do for Woods at this point? What can Woods do to what will push him up? Like, what will elevate him?
He's not far from where Jonathan Gresham is, which is we as viewers seem to remember that he loses a lot. When he shows up, we're like, oh yeah, he never wins. And which is weird because Shane Taylor, worst record in ROH this year, but every time he shows up, I feel like viewers kind of forget that. Viewers kind of just think, oh, here's Shane Taylor, big dude, hitman for hire, etc. We don't really think, oh, Shane Taylor never wins, he's going to lose this one. I think that when Woods shows up, and to an extent I think that with Gresham too, is he's probably not going to win this one, but it'll be a good match. So
that's interesting, because I actually don't have that reaction to Jonathan Gresham, despite the fact that you're right. Like, just by just analysis of the numbers, like, it's likely that he will lose a match that we're about to watch. But I always look forward to watching Jonathan Gresham. Because I feel like there are surprises there. I feel like there are potentials for wins that because of his talents and his ability in the ring and like his kind of innate charisma as a wrestler, I look forward to seeing if those surprises happen. I remember watching the Gresham and Lethal matchup at Masters of Craft and being like, well, there's no way Gresham's going to win, but I'm really excited to see him not win. With Josh Woods,
you don't feel that way.
I don't feel that way. Like, there's not an enticing way of him not winning. And I feel bad about saying that because there's nothing about his wrestling that is really lacking in one way or another. It's just he as a wrestler in general is a little bit underwhelming as a presence, as someone who offers something a little different or exciting when you're sitting down to watch a match.
Yeah. Maybe he's another one of these guys who would benefit from spending some time in a tag team.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe he would be a good...
With the machine guns? I don't think so. Yeah. But with somebody, put him in a different scenario, put him in a different setting, and or give him somebody to play off of. Because that's the same thing, too, is he won the Top Prospect Tournament last year. And I don't know if I've heard him say more than two sentences since then.
Hmm.
And, I mean, that Top Prospect Tournament list, so I just pulled it up right now out of curiosity. And you're looking at the winners of this thing. 2011, Mike Bennett, current Raw superstar. 2013, Matt Taven, CMLL mm-hmm. champion, multi-time champion in ROH. 2014, Hansen, NXT superstar. 2015, Donovan Dijak, NXT. 2016, Leo Rush, NXT. 2017, Josh Woods. He kind of, when you look at that list, he does kind of stick out. And maybe it's not fair because he's the youngest guy on that list. You know, Bennett.
Yeah.
Bennett won it 7 years ago. A lot can change in 7 years.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe it's a promise of things to come. Like, he's going to go somewhere. We just have to, like, there's got to be some momentum for him. And if it's not going to happen at ROH, it's going to have to happen somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. He's another wait-and-see scenario, I guess. But it definitely seems like something needs to be tweaked. Either if maybe not his in-ring style, because it he does maybe too many knees, I don't know. But it I don't look at him and think, oh, he just wrestles the same as blah blah blah. He has a unique style compared to a lot of the other guys.
Yeah, and obviously, like, he was in the match in his hometown on Friday at Bound by Honor, and he, like, won it, you know, possibly as a courtesy to the fact that he was in his own hometown. But I felt like it was a credible win. I felt like he did a good job of matching Shane Taylor, and that match wasn't, entirely rote. But
and he had MMA star King Mo in his corner.
That was an interesting thing to feature. So
I wonder... Could something as simple as that make the difference? King Mo wrestled for TNA for a while, I believe. Could ROH bring him in and make them a tag team and give Woods some rub from Mo's fame?
That would be so cool, and that would be that shot in the arm for Josh Woods to really start building his momentum in ROH.
ROH has really gotten away from managers lately as well, which is odd, because when I started watching a couple years ago, you had Truth Martini, you had Vita Scott, you had the Embassy with Prince Nana and Stokely Hathaway. There were a fair number of managers kicking around back then. These days, is there anybody?
Not as far as who are present in the broadcaster.
The closest thing we have is Bernard the Business Bear. And he's not exactly covering for anybody's mic skills, you know? He's not carrying the promos, per se. He's just taking the big bumps at ringside.
Yeah, pretty much consistently.
So, yeah, I don't know. I hope they do something with Woods. He seems, he seems like an all right guy. He got, was it this match or was it Saturday night where he got the Who's Your Barber chant? that was not a good sign. Maybe it is. Sheamus kind of ran with the "you look stupid" chance. So
looking dumb is not necessarily a bad career move in wrestling. That's something that's great about the world of pro wrestling, is that it's just reassuring for all of us, marks living our real lives, that you can excel and even gain fame and fortune based off of just doing one thing or looking one way that is in essence incredibly dumb.
Yeah, if the fans are responding to any aspect of your presentation, use it.
Yeah.
Last thing I was going to say, on the topic of the top prospect tournaments, I always kind of enjoyed it. It was a chance to see a bunch of rookies and unsigned ROH people competing for an ROH contract. Historically, every single version has taken place in January and February. There wasn't one this year. And we're into May now. So part of me thinks maybe it just got bumped later on this year because they were already doing the Women of Honor tournament. They didn't want to do two tournaments simultaneously. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's been no announcement, no acknowledgement of any 2018 tournament yet. So I don't know if they're going to skip it this year. I hope not, because they've been doing it consistently for the past 5-6 years. I asked Ian Riccoboni on Twitter. He never responded. So I don't know if he doesn't know himself. But that would be interesting as well.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Part of me think when Woods picked up his victory over Shane Taylor on Friday night, I was kind of thinking of that. Was maybe they're going to start rebuilding Woods, knowing we're doing a top prospect tournament soon, and we want last year's winner to look strong when we start that tournament to sell the prestige of the tournament.
But that's very likely if they're doing a tournament at all.
But then he lost again. There's been no mention of any tournament. So that's just me. That's pure speculation on my part. I don't know. Another mystery for us to ponder going forward. But clearly no mention of any tournament at the tapings you attended.
No.
So who knows? Maybe they bump it to the fall, or maybe it doesn't happen this year. I don't know.
Yeah, what a weird gap, though, because how long has it been going on?
They did one in 2011, none in 2012, but then every year since. So 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, every January.
So it's not like completely unheard of that they would get a gap after the first year, then with, you know, several straight years in a row.
Yeah, that was only the first one, and then 5 years in a row since then.
Yeah.
So I hope they do one. And it's been good about, like, it's another one of these things where it's like an American Auto thing, where not just the winner ends up with a contract. Like Beer City Bruiser was in the last tournament. He didn't win. Look where he is now. He's a regular fixture on TV. And same with, I think, Punishment Martinez. Never won the tournament. He lost to Leo Rush in the second round. Now here he is in ROH, and he's treated as a top guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So also on TV this week, that's it for the matches, but we had a bunch of promos, some backstage stuff. Talked about Marty Scurll, said he wants his title shot, best in the world, in June. And then two interesting promos, one with Cody and Brandy, one with Dalton and the boys. And takeaway for me, Cody and Brandy's promo. Cody asks Brandy, who's your favorite wrestler on the planet? And she says, the American Nightmare Cody. And then she asks him, who's your favorite wrestler? And he says, Dalton Castle. I like Dalton Castle. I don't care what these keyboard warriors and internet trolls say about his title reign being a failure and about him being a flop as champion. I think he has a potential, basically. I think he's a good hand sort of thing. And then Brandy makes a gesture across her stomach, and Cody says, wait, are you pregnant? And she says, no, the title. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm coming for the world title. So that was part one. And then later on in the show, we get Dalton and the boys. And again, acknowledging the fact that people online, myself included, have criticized Dalton's title reign as being kind of a flop so far and a little flat. And Dalton says, you know, some people say that Dalton Castle isn't world championship material. Well, I've beaten Jay Lethal, Beretta, Punishment Martinez, Marty Scurll. You're telling me that's not championship material? Very interesting. Again, ROH is good about acknowledging what the viewers are thinking, not playing dumb or acting like we aren't, you know, just acknowledging, like, hey, people online have been saying Dalton's reign has been kind of flat, has been kind of whatever. We'll use it. We'll make that part of the storyline. I love that aspect of it, even if, ooh, like, I came away from Cody's promo going, ouch, shots fired at me. Like, that was 100% me.
Well, I'm in a rare state where I'm on the same page as Cody, because I don't fully understand what people are criticizing. Dalton's had a couple losses recently, but overall, like, if you're looking at the major events that he's had, the major matches he's had since he got the title, I'm seeing a really good run. The title match between him and Jay Lethal, that was a fantastic match. I'm very confused when I see those comments. I get the basic gist of them, but like, not the way I feel. I'm on the same page as Cody, if Cody's being sincere.
Well, so since I'm on the other side, I'll explain my point of view.
Okay, please do.
Yeah, I like Dalton. I think for me, the reason his title reign has felt a little flat, one part is that he's definitely felt overshadowed by all of the Bullet Club drama, everything with the Golden Lovers. He hasn't felt
true.
Like the top guy in ROH. He's felt like a guy with the top title. But if you were to plot out, like, here's the most important people in ROH at the moment, it would be everyone in Bullet Club, then maybe him, or then maybe even like Lethal and the Briscoes, and then him, depending on how you do it. That's part of it. The other part, I felt like I just wasn't that into his match with Lethal or his match with Marty. His match with Lethal, it was because they were two baby faces and they liked each other, but it didn't feel like there was anything beyond that. And then his feud with Marty just felt rushed. Again, I think my favorite Dalton feud is still with Silas, and that's because there was so much character work involved. And mm-hmm. it became so heated over time. Whereas Dalton's reign this so far this year has been kind of, here's his next challenger. They have one interaction before the pay-per-view, and then they have the match. It doesn't feel really heated between them. It hasn't felt like there's a lot going on. And like Dalton hasn't had that promo that really engaged me since his first one, way back on the first episode of the year when Lethal came out and the boys made human furniture for both of them and Lethal was trying to like sit on the boy and then was super uncomfortable about it. Since then, like Dalton hasn't really had that in-ring promo or that moment that's really leapt out to me and gone, yeah, that's the Dalton Castle I love.
I mean, I admit I'm a easy sell Dalton Castle. I just kind of dig the whole character, all the work he does with it, all the trappings and the aesthetic details that he puts into it. But I think that some of the problems with him being overshadowed really aren't. He's not the one responsible for that. That's ROH booking. That's Bullet Club stuff. That's putting priority on to a enterprise above the ROH property. So, and that's something I think that they're trying to like take us back from now, and they're trying to rectify because they've become keenly aware that Bullet Club, as you mentioned before, it's like they're more popular than 90% of other like wrestling entities out there. ROH really needs to own their brand and their branded wrestlers, and that means giving more attention to their title holder.
Well, that's the thing. So I'm not one of the people who feels Dalton isn't world championship material and shouldn't be the champion.
Okay.
I'm on board with him being champion. I think he's as good as any of the past champions. I just think his reign as champion hasn't been as good as it could be. And I'm not blaming him for that at all. I think that's just the way that it's been booked. Or, you know, I wanted his feud with Marty to go on for a couple of months and really get heated and get personal, because I thought that'd be super beneficial for Dalton and the title. And maybe, if Marty and Cody both get involved, that the promo possibilities and exchanges there could be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're building any kind of like tension between Cody and Marty, and Dalton in the middle with the title that they both want, like, that's a real, with Cody now expressing like respect towards Dalton, that's an interesting game to play. And I think that we still have, even with the push that Marty seems to be getting, and with the, I mean, I'm on record just saying that I think within the next, with less than 6 months from now, Marty's going to be the next title holder. I think even with all that, we have a lot of room to play with that tension and to still build that rivalry. I think we still have that time.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, this is assuming Dalton is still champion in June, because he's defending the world title against Matt Taven May 9th in Massachusetts as part of War of the Worlds. So we've got another week and a half. That's only one episode of television. Hopefully we get some interaction between him and Taven, because I think they could bring some great stuff out of each other too. But War of the Worlds has felt kind of like an afterthought at this point.
Yeah, and which is a shame, because there's a lot of really great stuff coming up in that tour.
Yeah, they're coming to my city and it's not being treated like a big deal. So I am personally insulted.
That's ridiculous. And who do you get to see in your city?
As of this moment, the only thing advertised, Jay White and Punishment Martinez for the IWGP US title.
All right.
And SoCal Uncensored versus Rocky Romero and Roppongi 3K.
Oh, that's going to be interesting to see. I will, Rocky Romero and Sho and Yo, that's going to be a really interesting matchup against those guys, especially with Scorpio Sky being kind of a similar flyer to Sho and Yo. I look forward to watching that match.
Yeah, and you'll get to watch it on Honor Club. So yeah. That's one cool thing.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. See, before this week's TV, I had no idea what the next pay-per-view or what the next big event really was, because they don't really distinguish too much on the live events listing on ROH. They say, like, here are upcoming events, but it's not clear to me whether or not one of the War of the Worlds event is, like, a mini pay-per-view or whether they're all house shows, because in the era of Honor Club, there's no such thing as house shows anymore.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really sure, but the fact that Marty specifically mentioned Best in the World right away sent a flag to me that, okay, I guess that's the next big thing. That's their next SummerSlam or whatever. I don't know. Last thing on this week's television, the return of Bully Ray.
This was a blast in person.
Okay. I'm glad somebody enjoyed it, because I'm sure a lot of people sitting at home were like, really? Really?
Yeah. Translated to screen, it doesn't translate the same way. In person, it was a lot of fun because, I mean, as part of this heel turn, it's turning on the audience as well. So it means addressing the fact that, like, last time he was in Pittsburgh, everyone was cheering for him and clapping for him. And now, like, people are booing at him and it's because of his behavior, but, like, refusing to address it as a, you know, the actual behavior. So there's a lot of really fun interplay with the audience that we got to be a part of. So people throwing stuff at him.
Oh, I mean, somebody bounced a streamer right off his head.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, perfectly timed.
Yeah, and I guess the difference as well here is the taping schedule. So when you attended this event and saw this in person, this was his first appearance since Supercard of Honor when he turned heel and beat up Cheeseburger.
Yes,
And stared down Flip Gordon and Joe Koff that night.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you how what a big deal Supercard was this year. I mean, it's a big deal, but, like, what a big deal because everybody in that room knew.
Yeah. Whereas by comparison, see, now that it's finally aired, I've seen Bully Ray do this shtick many times in between Supercard and this TV episode. You know, every Honor Club event since then, he's come out and done the, do you know who I am?
Mm-hmm.
Young guys suck. Jim Cornette is my spirit animal. Flip Gordon's a loser.
Yeah, I'm going to punch them on the balls. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen this a bunch of times now. I think he did it at both Bound by Honor events. I feel like he did it at the at Masters of the Craft, probably. You know, I've seen this by Bully many times over the past month. So I was waiting for the next step. I was waiting for Joe Koff to officially fire him as enforcer, or move him over to being an active wrestler or whenever, and, you know, book him and Cheeseburger for television 2 weeks from now or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get that. Instead, we just got him saying, Bully claiming that he's still enforcer, glaring at Joe Koff. Joe Koff, like, looking intimidated. And that was it.
Yep. Again, there's lots of stuff that I can say, but I won't because of the tapings, but they are headed in a direction with this that they proved later on in the tapings. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That was my hope. My hope, yeah. And I wrote this in my written report for the TV show, is, you know, next week, Koff will come out with Flip and Cheeseburger or somebody and officially fire Bully then, and then book him and Flip Gordon at Best in the World or something to that extent. Because if Bully sticks around as the heel authority figure, that makes zero sense. I hate heel authority figures. I don't want Bully just doing a Stephanie McMahon impression on ROH TV. I don't need that.
I mean, we already have kind of our, like, pseudo, like, riff on Vince McMahon in Cody's characterization of, like, the businessman. We don't really need a Stephanie McMahon villain.
No, if we do, you know, Brandy can be Stephanie, I guess, in this scenario, and Bernard can be Shane with just a modicum of more charisma. So yeah, hopefully without spoiling anything, we get some good follow up with Bully soon and get back on track. I guess he's going back to being a full time wrestler. That's my assumption here, which raises a bunch of questions, because his retirement storyline with the Briscoes and Dreamer was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of disappointing. I don't know. Did he really, like, fake his retirement just to get into the WWE Hall of Fame? And then now that he's got the ring, he's like, wait, I can go back to wrestling? I'm very curious to know the backstage mindset of all of this.
I mean, I enormous respect if that's the case.
Yeah, it worked. He's got the ring now and he's using it on TV. I'm a WWE Hall of Famer. And the fans are booing, and it's like, that's classic. That's some great stuff. So, wow, we're almost up to the hour and a half mark already, folks. That's it for this week's TV, though. War of the Worlds is our next live events. We got a four-date tour. May 9th in Laurel, Massachusetts. Is it Lowell? I don't know how to pronounce that.
Lowell?
Lowell? I thought it was like a Louisville, where you're just like, whoa.
I think it's actually pronounced. I think
it's
it
just
is
noise. It's not just a bleh.
It's just not like a guttural noise.
May 9th, somewhere in Massachusetts. May 11th, in my hometown, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. May 12th, Royal Oak, Michigan. May 13th, in Chicago, Illinois. Bunch of matches announced. New Japan talent are going to be around. You've got Bullet Club versus Los Ingobernables de Japón. Chicago, official, Austin Aries getting his TV title match against Silas Young. Also, Switchblade Jay White, Young Bucks versus Takahashi and Bushi, Castle and Taven. I'm assuming more matches will be announced soon because this is all happening. And, I mean, they're heading to Massachusetts in 11 days, and they've only got two matches announced.
Yep.
So, I don't know. But we'll be watching those on Honor Club and enjoying all of that action. Next week on TV, two tag matches officially announced. Coast to Coast versus Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis. And Dalton and the Boys against the Kingdom, which I guess is setting up that Dalton and Taven match at War of the Worlds. So there you go.
Yep.
No listener mail this week. You can reach the show, talkinghonor@gmail.com. Send me all your thoughts on War of the World, what to do with Josh Woods, who is the Shane McMahon of ROH, being the Elite is Studio Ghibli, who's Totoro. Send me all those thoughts. I guess Barry the Drug Free Bear is Totoro.
Oh, no way.
And Kota Ibushi is the Cat Bus.
Now that I can see.
You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Forked. That's FORKEDPGH.
Okay. So thank you so much, Emily, for joining me this week.
Yeah, thank you, Harley.
This is your first wrestling podcast ever.
First wrestling podcast ever.
All right. So send your hate mail to talkinghonor@gmail.com. Drive her back to never discussing wrestling again.
Yes. Push me back into my 13-year-old self where I couldn't be an open wrestling fan anymore.
Yes. Be sure to tweet Emily and ask her to show you her puppies. All that classic 90s, 90s women's empowerment. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.